very much, Mr. Shamus. It's really a pleasure to be here and to address you. I was asked to speak about the topic of, I think, weddings. I think that's the official topic. I think this is a series about life cycle events, and it's a little bit open-ended because I could give a year course, I suppose, on the subject of weddings from a halachic perspective, what goes into it, and so forth. But I'm going to try to speak a little bit about some of the hashkafic and halakhic orientations of weddings. And obviously, the main purpose of a wedding is to lead to a marriage. So we'll speak about why weddings are so important as the first step towards a Jewish marriage. It's a little bit of a funny topic for me to speak about because my main line of work, of course, is serving as the Abbez Din, the chief rabbinical judge of the Chicago Rabbinical Council. I've been involved with Bate Din, with the world of rabbinical courts for over 20 years already. And I don't really get to perform so many weddings, you know, in this capacity. I'm much more called upon to perform divorces. Because the Beis Din is not utilized by people who want to get married. So you don't go to the Beis Din to get married. You go rent out a catering hall and you make plans for a big giant wedding celebration. And you're hoping that you'll never, ever have to set foot in a Beis Din, which is generally viewed as a place where we resolve disputes, where we officiate over Jewish divorces. We do some Jewish conversions. We have, you know, some other types of ritual ceremonies that we preside over, but not so much weddings. I probably have presided over, I don't know, I guess it would be in excess of 3,000 Gittin Jewish divorces over the past 20 years. So that's much more something that I'm familiar with. On the other hand, the reality is that the whole purpose of when we do a get, when we do a Jewish divorce in the Beis Din, is to free up people who are in a marriage that for whatever reason, unfortunately, didn't work out and wasn't functional or successful, so that we can free up the couple, mostly free up the woman, to be able to get remarried, so that there's an ability to build a true bayis neman b'Yisrael. That's why in the Gemara, the tractate, the Masechta that deals with the Gittin, actually precedes the Masechta that deals with Kiddushin. And people say, shouldn't it be the other way around? First you get married and then divorce. The answer is no. When you get married, you're supposed to like stay married. That should last, that may have asked from Shana, till 120 years. But unfortunately, in rare cases, so we hope that they will be very few and far between, when it is necessary for there to be a get, our hope is that afterwards there will be a kiddushin that will follow. There will be a happy and fruitful and functional marriage that will last that may have esrim shana. So that's what I view myself as doing when it's unfortunately necessary to unwind a marriage, that I'm preparing the parties to be able to move on with their lives and go on to have a beautiful Jewish wedding and a beautiful Jewish marriage in perpetuity. So the Gemara says further that if a person, a rabbi, doesn't have a proficiency when it comes to Gittin, when it comes to Jewish divorce, or when it comes to Kiddushin, when it comes to marriage, then he shouldn't be involved with them. He shouldn't be officiating over these matters. And the question is, well, we understand that we need the Beis Din. You see my Beis Din background over here. We need a Beis Din when it comes to Jewish divorce because it's very, very complicated. All of the laws and all of the rules and regulations are very detailed, they're very nuanced, and you need to have a tremendous amount of expertise in order to preside over a get. But why do we say that a person has to have any great proficiency when it comes to presiding over over a wedding? A wedding isn't that hard. You go, you see, what does the rabbi do? He says a couple of brachos, makes a brave for your guffin on wine, gives it to the chassan and kala to drink. You know, the chassan gives the kala a ring. Everybody says mazel tov. You know, if you have some brachos under the chuppah, the rabbi doesn't really need to say, doesn't seem to need to do too much. So in fact, some of the commentators, such as the Taz, for example, say that you're right. Really, the high level of proficiency that's necessary is only to preside over a get. To preside over a wedding, we really pretty much allow any rabbi to preside over a wedding. That's not really too terrible, too hard. The stakes aren't that huge. If you make a mistake, you didn't manage to marry off the couple properly, but their children aren't going to be, you know, illegitimate. If they weren't halachically married, it's unfortunate if you didn't get the job done. But with a get, the consequences are much more severe. If you mismanage a get, and then the woman thinks she's divorced and she's not really, and she gets a remarried, she's committing adultery, the children are illegitimate, the stakes are obviously much larger. So therefore, what some of the commentary suggest is, well, when do you need to have proficiency when it comes to performing weddings? You need to have proficiency when it's a wedding that followed a divorce, because then you have to really make sure that the divorce was done properly, that the get was done properly in order to be able to perform the wedding. But otherwise, it's not really such a big deal. However, other commentaries, particularly of Yaakov Reish, who was the author of the commentary, the Shfus Yaakov, I think a 19th century work. So Yaakov Reish says, no, it's not true. Really, you need to have a high level of proficiency to perform marriages as well, because there are all kinds of questions. You have to investigate the background of the parties, make sure that there's no illegitimacy in their background, make sure that that the person's really Jewish, make sure that the person's really legitimate. Did the mother or grandmother ever have a get? And if they had a, if they were married multiple times, and then this child might be from a second marriage when the first marriage wasn't properly terminated with the get, which would raise questions of illegitimacy. Was the person adopted? So that we have to, you know, make sure that the adoption was from a Jewish adoption agency, and that there's evidence that the mother of this individual was Jewish. This person was Jewish. Did anybody in the family convert? We have to make sure that the conversion was valid. Was there an intermarriage maybe in the family, and only the father was Jewish and the mother wasn't Jewish, but people just thought that she was Jewish? So there are a number of different steps of investigation that have to take place even when you're performing a wedding. And much of what I do when I'm asked to be Mesader Kiddushin, one of the first things I do is I sit down and I meet with the chassan and I meet with the kala, to go over all of their family histories, to examine if there were any divorces or intermarriages or conversions or adoptions at any point in the family history. And if there were, then to make sure that everything checks out perfectly. We have a general principle that call mishpachos b'cheskos k'shevos einomdos. That's the Gemara in Kiddushin. Says that the families are generally assumed to be kosher families. People go crazy over who am I going to marry. I want to have a good shidduch for my child. I don't think they're a bad shidduchim per se. I always felt like we should look like for bad shidduchim. So, you know, all those people, you know, who are like the bad shidduchim should get married off. You know, they shouldn't be left alone. But the reality is that there are no bad shidduchim. It's all good shidduchim. All the families are considered to be presumed to be kosher and legitimate families. Just if you uncover an issue, so, you know, you examine it a little bit. But on the whole, if you know a family to be established within a certain Jewish community as a legitimate and as a genuine Jewish family, that goes to all of the day schools and the synagogues, and they participate in communal life. So it's generally assumed that they're a kosher family. So usually what happens when I'm the Mesader Kiddushin is that I'll know one of the parties will be from the community and the other party will be from outside of the community. Sometimes both parties are from the community. That's very easy. But if one party is from outside of the community, so I'll get in touch with the rabbis from that community and just make sure that this is a family that's a well-recognized and well-established family. Sometimes there's a question as to whether a person has a lineage of a Kohen or a Levi. If a man is a Kohen, So that requires, as the Shus Yaakov says, that requires a lot of investigation on the part of the officiating rabbi. The officiating rabbi has to make sure that the woman who is engaged to marry him is permitted to a kohen, because a kohen is prohibited from marrying many different women. He can't marry a convert. He can't marry a woman who is divorced. He can't marry a woman who had relations with an individual who was off limits to her, including a non-Jew. Let's say you have a balas tshuva who went to college and had relationships that weren't so appropriate, so she could do tshuva, that's fine, but she might not be able to marry a kohen. So all of these things have to be very scrupulously investigated by a rabbi in order to make sure that he's permitted to perform the wedding. I know we had a case going back around 20 years ago where there was a woman who was engaged to marry a kohen, and she had been converted, but she wasn't converted herself actively. She was converted when she was inside her mother's womb. Her mother converted when her mother was pregnant with her. So they thought that this young lady was allowed to marry a kohen, but she didn't convert herself directly. She converted inside of her mother's womb. So they didn't think she had the status of a convert for purposes of being prohibited to a kohen. But the halacha, the Gemara in Kiddushin says, is that it's based on the pasuk in Yechezkel, is that a woman has to be conceived when she's to a Jewish mother. Not just born to a Jewish mother, but the conception has to be from a Jewish mother in order for her to be permitted to marry a kohen. So therefore, it was a big disappointment that the family didn't know that this young woman was prohibited to a kohen, and she was engaged to a kohen. So it was a very difficult situation. So this requires rabbinic expertise. That's what the Shus Yaakov says, that you need expertise not only to perform divorces, but you need expertise to perform weddings. However, it's much more cheerful to perform weddings. A wedding is the pinnacle of happiness and of ecstasy in our tradition. There's no greater simcha than the simcha of a marriage. In fact, the Gemara in Shabbos says that the Shechina, the divine presence, only resides upon a simcha shel mitzvah. It doesn't reside when people are depressed. It doesn't reside when people are being frivolous. It doesn't reside in an atmosphere where there's anger. Shechina only resides when there's simcha. It has to be happiness, and it can't be frivolous happiness. It has to be the happiness of a mitzvah, simcha shel mitzvah. That's why the Nevi'im, in order to be inspired with their Ruach HaKodesh, we find this with Shaul, for example, they would have people play musical instruments so that they would be in a good mood. They would be in a good mood. They would be more well-suited for the Shechina to be able to descend upon them, for them to be able to receive a Nevuah. So one has to be in a good state, a good frame of mind. So what's the greatest frame of mind that the Shechina would reside? Because you have a simcha shel mitzvah, you have a happiness of a mitzvah. So Rashi, commenting on that Gemara in Shabbos, says it's achnasas kala, the paradigmatic case of a simcha shel mitzvah, of a very happy event that is suffused with the mitzvah, is a wedding. This is the crescendo of all simchas, of the greatest happiness that we can have, is to be able to bring about a wedding. Now, why is that? Why is a wedding so special in our tradition? Well, we say at in the Sheva Brachos that we recite at the wedding. We say, Samech Tesamach Re'im Ahuvim, Samechecha Yetzirecha B'gan Eden B'kedem. The world was created with a wedding. It was created with the wedding of Adam and Chava. The wedding is what enables us to fulfill the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to raise families that are in accordance with the Torah tradition, that are able to spread the Kedusha of the Torah, the Kedusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, for us to be able to partner in creation of new generations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara Nida says that there are three partners with respect to every single child. The partners are the father, the mother, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to be able to be a shutaf with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's nothing of a higher madrega than the kedusha that you have at a wedding. That's why kiddushin, the Gemara in kiddushin says that the term kiddushin, which is a reference to the Jewish wedding, is from the word hektesh. It's from the word sanctification, because it's supposed to be a sanctification of our lives. This is an event which is one of great holiness. The Gemara in Yavama says that if a person, let's say a man, is not married, so then he is living without Torah. When he's living without Torah, he might be sitting in the Beis Medrash all day with a Gemara in front of him and a Shita Mekubetzes and the Rambam and all this, these farm. So what do you mean he's without Torah? So it means that he's not properly able to learn Torah to the fullest degree and to be able to spread Torah unless he's married. So the Gemara says that anybody who is Mesameach, Achos, and Mekala, anybody who goes to a wedding and participates in a wedding event, so that person is a zocha l'Torah. That person merits to higher levels of Torah learning and being able to spread Torah in their own lives. So why is that? Because the wedding, the joining together of man and woman, who we assume are destined to each other. So that brings about a higher level of Torah learning. The Stiplegon used to say that no matter how much a fellow learns in yeshiva, he doesn't really reach the highest potential of his Torah learning until he gets married, until he's a shalem, because marriage provides a shlemut. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks the question. He says, "Why is the laws of marriage as ki kach ish isha?" As a man marries a woman. And why is that in Sefer Devarim? It's in Parshas Ki Tetzeh, with most of the personal laws between Ben Adam L'Chaveru, between one person and another person, are found like in Sefer Shmos, Sefer Vayikra, Mishpatim, Kedoshim, and so forth. What is why is in Devarim has like the communal laws, the laws of what do you do if an entire city worships the Bodhisattva? The important, you got to appoint the king. You have to establish rabbinical courts. What is the community obligated to do if you find somebody who was killed on the road and we don't know who killed him, so we have to do a negla rufa? All of these laws, they're communal laws. They have to do with the entire congregation of Israel. But why do we then have this personal law of getting married in the middle of Sefer Devarim? So he says that the reason why we have this personal law is because it's not personal. Because a marriage, a wedding, is something which is a very public communal affair from our perspective. Every single time that people get married, so we're furthering the cause of Torah, we're furthering the cause of Yiddishkeit, we're furthering the purpose of creation, which was Pru Avu, Adam and Chava, populating and propagating the universe. In accordance with God's will. So therefore, this is a communal event. That's why your typical Jewish wedding has many, many people who get invited. We don't believe in elopements. In fact, there were authorities that wanted to nullify any wedding that was performed where you didn't have at least 10 people, like a minyan, a present. You're supposed to have a minyan in order to recite Sheva Brachos. They wanted to say, if you just get married in front of two people, in front of two witnesses, so and you don't have a full minyan of men for not only the kiddushin but the nisuin that follow, for the have the chuppah and the yichud and all that, so then the wedding should be declared null and void. So we didn't follow that opinion. They're still considered to be married, but it was considered to be such a priority to have lots of people at a wedding. That this position was considered by some authorities in order to avoid these situations of elopement. So that's why we don't have the concept of a honeymoon in Judaism. Sometimes a chassan and a kala, they get married and 2 months later, okay, they'll take a vacation, but we don't have the notion that you get married and then you run away immediately afterwards. You're not allowed to run away afterwards. We have Sheva Brachos. A chassan and kala might not be interested in Sheva Brachos. They might only want to just be alone with each other already after all the fanfare and the pomp and the ceremony of the rabbi. We don't allow that. We have all of the Sheva Brachos, and we make sure that we have lots and lots of people around and panim chadoshos and lots of celebrations and festivities, because it's a communal celebration. A Jewish wedding is a communal celebration. That's why it's so important to have a Misada Kiddushin, to have a rabbi who investigates before the wedding to make sure that everything will be Kedasa Kedin, that these two people are allowed to marry each other, that there aren't any Yuchsin issues. If there are Yuchsin issues, you can take care of it. Let's say that the husband, the husband's not a Kohen, and he's allowed to marry a convert, and he's engaged to a girl, and it turns out there's a yichus issue. The mother had, I don't know, a reform, a conservative conversion. Nobody was really paying attention. The children went to the day school system, and now the daughter is getting married, and the rabbi does a little bit of poking around, a little bit of research, and discovers the mother never had an Orthodox conversion. So there's a question as to where this daughter went to Beis Yaakov. She went to all of these top-notch yeshiva day school institutions. But it turns out that there's a real question about her Yiddishkeit, that maybe she's not halakhically Jewish. So you don't have to go berserk. You know, sometimes people come to the Beis Din, and this is why they come to the Beis Din. It's right before a couple is about to get married, and they discover that there's a yichus, there's a yuchsin issue, and somebody's halakhic credentials are not 100% impeccable. And it needs to be fixed. So I always try to put people at ease and say, okay, everyone has a nisyonos. It should be the biggest nisayon. That there's a parsha in the Torah of getting married, of marriages, of weddings, and there's a parsha in the Torah of geiros, of conversions, and we can put those two parshios together and have the person go to a mikveh in front of the Beis Din. She has to go to the mikveh anyway before she gets married. She'll go to a mikveh, and she'll immerse for the sake of a conversion to Judaism so that there won't be any questions anymore. There won't be any doubts regarding herself, regarding the future legitimacy of the children, and everybody can get married very happily. It's important that people not overly stress when a situation can be corrected. Halacha has all kinds of mechanisms to correct these issues. The other thing that I picked up from all of the gittin that we perform is just the importance of shalom bayis, about how building a Jewish home is so much about building a harmonious home, and you want to start off the couple on the right foot. There was a chassan who came to Rav Soloveitchik and asked him that he was marrying a Sephardi girl, a girl who came from a Sephardic background. And he was an Ashkenazi, so he was ready to have a normal, regular Ashkenazi wedding. And the girl wanted to have, I don't know, all kinds of different customs that she was throwing at him. Besamim, brachosam, besamim, who knows what, you know, that were being added to the chuppah ceremony. People, I don't know, dancing as they're walking down the chuppah, you know, with loud music and whatever it is that the woman's family was accustomed to. And he said to the Rav, listen, I'm an Ashkenazi. And and I understand that the halacha is that when a woman gets married, she accepts upon herself all of the husband's customs. She's going to take upon herself all of the Ashkenazic customs once we get married. So how can I tolerate all of these intrusions into the wedding is supposed to be like, all of these Sephardic customs and the like? So Rav Soloveitchik said that the purpose of all of these customs that are introduced is just to add the more happiness and festivity to the wedding. That's a good thing. We want lots of happiness and festivity to the wedding. You want to get started on the right foot. So all the customs that they want to have, if it's going to add the happiness, it's going to make them happy. It's going to start off your wedding on the right foot with a sense of shalom bayis that you're giving in order to make your kala happy. So that's only going to lead to good things. So people shouldn't fight so much when it comes to the planning of weddings. Exactly, it's going to be this way, it's going to be according to this custom, that custom, whatever it is that people want to do, we can accommodate all of the customs. I was Misada Kiddushin recently, I think the custom from the Kalas family was that they like to have somebody give a Birchas Kohanim. That it was a family, family of Kohanim, and one of the older relatives was looking forward to doing a Birchas Kohanim. I don't generally incorporate Birchas Kohanim into my repertoire, so my routine when I'm Misada Kiddushin. It's not one of the standard items on the schedule. But it was important to this family. So I said, sure, it'll be a nice kippah that we can give this grandfather, great uncle, whatever it was, who wanted to do the Berchas Kohanim. And there's no reason not to add it to the happiness and the festivities of a wedding. A wedding should be laid back. It's very important. I always tell people it's not about the wedding. The wedding, so yeah, it's the job of the Masad HaKiddushin to make sure that it's a kosher wedding, that we do it properly, but the main focus is on the marriage. People make this mistake when it comes to Shidduchim as well. People go out and they think to themselves, oh, what chasen do I want to walk down the aisle? What kala do I want to walk down the aisle? That's what they're thinking to themselves. What they should think of to themselves is, what chasen do I want to accompany me when I'm in the supermarket aisle? What kala do I want to accompany me when I'm in the supermarket aisle? When I'm preparing for Shabbos, when I'm going to be bringing up children? Those are the questions. In order to have a really successful wedding, you have to make sure that it's for the purpose of a successful marriage, because the wedding doesn't really count for too much if the focus is not on the marriage. If people would think more about who's the person that I want to like do things with on a day-to-day basis over the course of a marriage, rather than focusing so much on the wedding, I think that the marriages would generally be much happier marriages. That's really the main purpose of a wedding, is to go into a very happy marriage. So therefore, it's important not to have ketata. The Gemara does say that when they would negotiate sort of the monetary arrangements, like the dowries before the wedding, you know, that there's no ksuba that doesn't come with a certain amount of meriva. It doesn't come with a certain amount of tension of people disagreeing about different aspects, what we call tigra, that sometimes would cause tensions in the days of old, that they would negotiate dowries and the like. So the Vilna Gaon said that's not really right. A man shouldn't marry a woman, you know, for how much money he's going to get from the father-in-law or anything like that. You should chill when it comes to these matters. The chassan and kala will figure out between themselves. There shouldn't be strife. The job is to minimize strife, and to be mevata. You give in on things. It's important to the other side, so you have to give in. I saw a very interesting advertisement or announcement in the Hamodia. We get in my house, so we have to find out what's going on in the world. So we get a newspaper, so we get Hamodia. It's a nice newspaper because they're so careful. There's never any lashon hara. Everything is clean and sneeze, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You can find out what's going on without being over in any isur. It's great. I'm sure there are other newspapers like it too. Very, very happy with it. Nice columns. So in the Hamodia, so they had an advertisement that to give to a particular tzedaka, and they said that if you're going to give to this tzedaka, so you'll get a blessing from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, that you'll make a simcha very soon. So first they said you make a simcha. So that's pretty good by itself, you know, to make a simcha. Everybody wants to be able to make a simcha. Baruch Hashem, it's a great thing. So they gave you a further bracha. Make a bracha very soon. I think they underlined the words very soon. And then they had in big, bold letters, without aggravation. That aggravation. So apparently people have aggravation when it comes to the planning simchas. It's not always such a simcha every single step of planning a simcha. So it's a bracha do with that aggravation, but one has to keep their eye on the big picture. The big picture is that you go into a wedding for the purpose of having a proper marriage. And that means also ensuring that one has their priorities straight in terms of what to look for. We saw that in this past week's parasha, in Parashas Chayei Sarah, that the Torah tells us what you're supposed to look for in a mate, what Yitzchak was looking for by proxy, what Abraham on his behalf was looking for for Shidduch for him when he sent Eliezer, looking for a balas chesed. Where Eliezer devised a test. The question whether it was the prophet to devise a test or not, but the ultimate, the reason why Eliezer, so to speak, gets a pass from Chazal is because the main thing that he was looking for in his test was really an attribute that you're supposed to look for. You're supposed to look for chesed, you're supposed to look for kindness. And Yitzchak took Rivka into his tent and saw that she also emulated the fine qualities of his mother. So you're supposed to look for chesed, kindness, compassion, and generosity. and also somebody who's going to convey the Mesorah. You want a husband who's a Baal Mesorah, who's going to be a Ben Torah, and you want a wife who's going to follow the Mesorah, who's going to be a paradigm of the mitzvahs of Taras HaMishpacha and Fasha Skala and Hadlakas Aner. And all the special attributes that Yitzchak found in Rivka, Hadlaka Saner being building a nice, beautiful Jewish home, and Afash Eschala, but also being about the internal dimensions of the Jewish home, that it be a bracha b'isa, that it be a vibrant home, a home of mitzvos, of food that's prepared, you know, in a kosher fashion, in a loving fashion, and so forth. These are the attributes that that you look for. When I think about the cases that they don't work out, the gittin, I'm reminded the first time I was ever introduced to a get was I was brought in when I was a Talmud at Yeshiva at YU. So I watched, maybe I was, I don't know, 19 years old, 20 years old at the time, I was very young. And I watched Rav Melech Schechter, who's the father of Rav Herschel Schechter, Rav Shlitas. Rav Melech Schechter was a dayan. He performed many gittin, and I watched him perform a get. And I saw that he asked the question before he even began the get. He had the husband sitting there, and he had the wife sitting there. And he said, are you sure you want to get divorced? You know, you can still work it out. It's never too late. It's never too late to work it out. So he told us that every single time that he presided over a get, and he also did probably thousands of gittin, certainly many hundreds, that every single time that he presided over a get, he would always ask that question. He would always try if it would be possible to preserve the marriage, to reconcile, he would try to do it. I thought that was a beautiful thing. And an important lesson, you know, for me and my work, not to become so jaded that, you know, if you can, you know, save the marriage and keep people together. We believe that, you know, the wedding is such a sacred event. It's a sacred event in part because, like it said in last week's parsha, that the Lavan and Bisuel, when they saw that Eliezer, you know, had come and had met through this Hashkacha Pratis, this divine providence, Rivka, and figured out that Rivka would be appropriate for his master, for Yitzchak, so they said, May Hashem Yitzchak Adavar. But this came from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is consistent with the Gemara that says that it's a bas kol that goes out and announces 40 days before the Yetziras Havlad, before a child is conceived, who bas ploni the ploni, who's supposed to marry whom? That it's two halves of a whole, that Chasen and Kala, we assume, were destined for each other. There's one Gemara, that the Gemara brings two apparently contradictory statements that we say, oh, there's a bas kol, there's machrezes velmeres that calls out who's supposed to marry whom. It's all divinely ordained who you're supposed to marry. And then there's another statement that says, emezavim loda melapimasa, that a person's only given a shidduch, only given their mate based on their worthiness, based on their deeds and their virtues. So the Gemara answers, no. Kambizivik Rishon, Kambizivik Sheni. One's talking about the first marriage is all divinely ordained. It was decreed from heaven before the child was born. Second marriage, okay, is all dependent upon the person's virtue. The Rambam says everything's dependent upon a person's virtue. So it could mean that there's a person who's like their ideal, you know, shidduch, but they'll only get the ideal shidduch if they're worthy in terms of their actions. That's how the Rambam explains it. Others say the Meiri says that it depends how early the person gets married. If they get married before they really had a chance to get their feet wet in terms of encountering real challenges and the seriousness of life, so then everything is divinely ordained. That's before the age of 20. If it's after the age of 20, that's called Zivik Sheni, so then it's all according to their virtue. Some say that the shidduchim can change over time. There's one shidduch that's appropriate from a young age, and one, you know, shidduch that, if that one doesn't work out, so there are other shidduchim that can become, you know, appropriate afterwards. I saw a beautiful explanation in the book. There's a book called Marriage by Rabbi Zelig Pliskin. He writes beautifully. It's over 500 pages, so, but most of it are stories of like marriage counseling with appropriate Ma'amari Chazal that are interwoven in the narrative and in the recitation of the stories. And he quotes an explanation that when the couple gets married, so this is divinely ordained, that they're supposed to marry each other, that this was the intended mate and so forth. But that's Sivik Rishon. Sivik Sheni is every single day that follows. The entirety of the marriage afterwards, that's dependent, I call it Bimasa. That's dependent upon the effort that the person puts into the marriage. It's not going to be automatic. We have to tell people, we have to tell the Chassan and Kala, okay, we performed the wedding, so now the rest is up to you. You have to really work hard. You have to work hard at the marriage, and you have to, you know, that's like what Desla says, ahava, that the love of a husband and to a wife is from the word hab, it's from giving. You have to figure out what the other party needs, and you have to give to them. Marriage is all about growing in terms of your own mitos. You saw Salanter said, a person could live with himself for 7 years and not learn anything from himself, not improve one iota. But you live with another person, so you have to improve. People get married, they say, oh, I was so good before this, and now now I'm getting angry and temperamental and impatient and so forth. No, the answer is you always had, you know, those deficiencies, and you got married, so you could learn to work on those deficiencies and make yourself better. So it's also, we say, Yosef Adam, the block of Yosef Adam, we're creating a person, we're creating a real person, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Zalkon Akeva Baram, and he called them Adam. That is, Adam is a combination of the Zohar and the Kaper who are created together and collectively become one Adam. Vayikra is Shemam Adam. So the actual wedding I should talk about a little bit. So what are the ingredients that go into the wedding? There are documents. If I'm a Seder Kiddushin, I have to get my documents ready. So one document, as we know, is the Ksuva. So the husband has to obligate himself to pay the Ksuva to his wife. A Ksuva consists of an obligation of 200 zuz. 200 zuz is not that much money. It's 50 shkalim. 50 shkalim is 10 times pinyon aben. I know what's pinyon aben these days, about $80. So it's about $800 nowadays. Okay, fair. That's 200 zuz that he obligates himself to pay to his wife in the event of death or divorce. And the Chazal say that the reason for this is shlote kala beina b'hotzia, that the husband should not precipitously divorce his wife. He should recognize that marriage is a serious thing, and he's going to have to pay a lot of money if he divorces his wife. So we want him to stay married. So it's intended as a deterrent on some level. And then he adds an additional amount that's called Tosefes Aksuva. The standard Tosefes Aksuva that's added nowadays is Masayim Sukukim. It's 200 Sukukim of silver. What's 200 Sukukim? Nobody knows really, but Moshe Feinstein says it's 100 pounds of silver. 100 pounds of silver, okay, so that adds up to a nice chunk of change. It could be like around $30,000 nowadays. That could be a lot of money. There are different opinions exactly how much it is. It doesn't end up generally getting paid out because, God willing, the couple should just remain married until 120 years. But if it comes up, so sometimes the Beis Din has to calculate exactly how the amounts would be paid out. But it was mostly relevant, the commentators point out, when it was possible for a husband to divorce his wife against the will. Then came along Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom said, we're not going to allow that. We're not going to allow divorcing against the wife's will. So therefore, everything has to be negotiated anyway. So since everything has to be negotiated, so we don't really pay as much attention to the amounts. Sometimes it comes up to have to calculate the amount, but not so much. So Rav Palm, who's the Rav Avram Palm, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vedas. So he used to say that if you look at the language of the Ksuv, it also has some other things in there too. It says, "Va'ana epla choke ve'ezen mafarnes." I'm going to take care of my wife. The husband, even during the marriage, has an obligation to take care of his wife, to provide her with mizonos, to provide her with food, to try to make a living, and so forth. So he said the main word of the entire ksuva nowadays is the word okir. Okir means to cherish. I'm going to cherish my wife. The husband has to cherish his wife, and the wife has to cherish her husband. This is I always tell people when I'm Seder Kiddushin, this is the most important part of the ksuva that I want you to focus upon, that you have to cherish each other. You have to have a tremendous amount of respect for each other. Like tonight, I felt a little bit guilty. I'm giving a shiur from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. So tonight is my wife's Hebrew birthday. So I said, I feel bad. And your Hebrew birthday, you're going to be, you know, I'm going to spend an hour, you know, giving a shiur. She said, no, this is what gives me my happiness in life, that you're teaching and spreading Torah. So that's nice. So it's important for the husband to express his sentiments, how much he cares, and it's important for the wife to express her sentiment as to how much she cares. So the Rambam talks about this in Hilchos Ishus. He says, husband is supposed to honor his wife more than he honors himself, and then it's reciprocal as well. That a wife should respect her husband more than is necessary. You know, that make him feel more chashiv than he really is, so he'll aspire to be worthy of the affection and the respect. So that's about Ogir. Ogir, very, very important part of the ksuva. The ksuva has to be filled out. You filled out the location and the date and the names of the parties. I often get a lot of shilos from rabbis. They call me up and they say, I'm performing a wedding in Rosemont. How do you spell Rosemont, you know, in Hebrew? So, okay, at some point you have to know how to spell everything, and you have to know the names of the chassan and the kala and the parents, and you got to write it all properly in the ksuba. And then the husband's mekabel kinyan. He lifts up an object of value, like a pen, for example. He lifts up the pen to accept upon him, in the presence of two witnesses, to accept upon himself all of the obligations of of the marriage, all the obligations of the ksuba. The witnesses watch him be mekabel kinyan, and then the person who is writing the ksuba, the mesada kiddushin, will write in the word in the ksuba, bekanina, that we saw the kinyan take place. Sometimes we'll write in the word bekanina beforehand, because what happens is that in all of the flurry and the rush and all the conversations that are taking place at the chassan station and all that, so sometimes the mesada kiddushin will forget to write the word v'kanina before the witness is signed, and then that could invalidate the entire ksuva. So I sometimes take my chances, and Baruch Hashem, the last wedding I performed, I took my chances, and I remembered, because I told everyone, make sure I don't forget to write v'kanina, make sure I don't forget. So you tell everybody, so then, you know, you'll be in better shape. So I told everybody, and I remembered myself to write in v'kanina. There's also the Tanoim document. The Tanoim document used to be that it would be signed when the couple would get engaged. We have a Jewish wedding requires first the stage of shiduchin, requires an engagement. Why does it require an engagement? Why not just, you know, have the parents marry you off their children and say, okay, they're going to marry each other and schedule the wedding day. And they don't need the shiduchin. They don't need to meet each other beforehand. So we say, no, that's very bad. Man's not allowed to betroth a woman. Kiddushin really means betrothal. He's not allowed to betroth the woman unless he sees her first. Ashiyarena. Why does he have to see her first? Maybe he'll find something that he doesn't like. He won't be so attracted to her. And then he'll violate the mitzvah after the reacha kamocha. Chazal understood there has to be a certain amount of chemistry. People shouldn't go overboard. Human beings are not perfect specimens. They weren't meant to be perfect specimens. Go crazy, but you know there should be a certain amount of chemistry between the chassan and the kala. That's a siman that they're meant for each other. You say that the Gemara Nida says that a chassan goes searching for his kala because she's like a lost aveda, because she was taken from his rib. Yachas mitzalosav, chapa was taken from the ribs of Adam Rishon. So when he goes and searches for his kala. So that is a manifestation of searching for lost objects. Everybody has a sense. There's simanim, you're losing an object. So the simanim are that you have an affection, that you have some type of a draw towards this individual. So that's a simen that this individual is intended for you. But you have to look for the other standard simanim. The person should be, a baal ches and a baalas ches. So my Rebbe Rav Shach likes to say, Jewish people are rachmanim by shanim megomli chasodim. They're merciful people. They're modest people, and they're kind-hearted people. And you have to look for somebody who has those attributes. These are all the simanim. So if you have those simanim, and the person's looks are agreeable to you, so then it's appropriate to go forward. So the tanaim, they would enter the tanaim after there was a shidduch. After they had the engagement, they would enter the tanaim that would say that if either party is going to back out, so they have to pay a penalty. So the later authorities discouraged that. They said sometimes it turns out that they made a mistake. They made a mistake. It's better. They should be able to back out before the wedding than have to go to a get and get divorced after the wedding. So better not to sign these tanoim, you know, before the wedding. So nowadays we sign tanoim at the wedding, and the tanoim just basically say everybody loves each other and we took care of everything, and now we reached this point in time, and they're going to enter into a beautiful, harmonious marriage together. And they're going to share all of their assets. They're not going to conceal any of their assets or anything from each other. It's going to be a partnership. They're going to be together. Everything's going to be pulled together, and they're going to live life together, and they'll live happily ever after, and so forth. And the Tanayim are actually signed before the Ksuva, and then after the Tanayim is signed, somebody reads the Tanayim. And then the two mothers break a plate. Why do they break a plate? Well, you got to give them something to do. Everybody should have something to do. But the idea of the breaking of the plate is also that now you can't go back. That's it. Once the Tanayim are signed, just like you're not going to be able to patch up this plate ever again, you're not going to be able to undo this deal. The deal is done. Now there's only a few minutes left until the chuppah, and we're going to go through with the wedding. That's the idea. Let's say that we're going to go through with the wedding. And then the ksuva is signed. The husband is mekabel kinyan. And then there's a lot of singing, because, as I said, there's supposed to be a sense of happiness and joy. There's a minhag for the, this isn't always done nowadays. I haven't seen it done so much here in Chicago. When I was getting married, you know, in New York, you know, going back more than a couple of decades, so the minhag was that all the chassarim used to say divrei Torah at the chassan's dish. I haven't seen it so much here. They used to say divrei Torah, but this was also part of the idea that the simcha of a marriage is that we're spreading the proliferation of Torah, that the fact that the husband's being married now is going to improve his Torah learning. The wife is going to be able to spread Torah learning, you know, and build a Torah household and so forth. So it's all about Torah. So we'd have the husband give a dvar Torah at the chassan's dish, and then people interrupt him as well, kind of like a little bit of a remiss of the shviras haluchos, because the marriage of a husband to a wife is supposed to emulate the marriage of Bnei Yisrael to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that our relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu is like one of Nisuin. So we throw in, you know, just like there was the Shvira Saluchos, we interrupt the Chassan a little bit in his Dvar Torah. Okay, after all of that, there's one other document. So the other document that we've introduced that we speak about tonight. So the Nachla Shiva was a codifier in the 18th century of all kinds of halachic forms. And he has what's called Tanayim Achronim. He says, yeah, there were Tanayim that used to get signed at the time of the Shiduchim. And then there were Tanayim that got signed like right before the wedding. Those were Tanayim Achronim. What were the Tanayim Achronim? The Tanayim Achronim would deal with some of the hard case situations. Would say, let's say that the husband and wife get into a quarrel. They get into a quarrel, and it's going to be a little bit of a sticky situation. How are we going to get them out of it? So they'll sign this Tanayim Achronim, which was an early version of a prenuptial agreement, that said the husband will agree that he'll pay a certain sum of money to help to support this woman that he married for a period of time until they're able to come to a Besdin. They'll agree that they'll go to a Besdin. The Besdin will work things out and reconcile them. So that was the Tanayim Achronim. So we have sometimes, unfortunately, I deal with Gittin, as I mentioned, we have Aguna situations. So Aguna situations, a marriage is over, husband refuses to give his wife a get. That's no good either. He should give her a get and free her to be able to marry somebody else. The one value of having this document signed, this Tanayim Achronim, is that it says that as long as the couple is separated, the husband will pay a certain sum of money to support his wife, as long as they're obviously still married, according to Jewish law. So if the marriage can't be saved, he'll have an incentive to give her a get, so he's not going to have to pay this sum of money for the rest of his life. And you also throw into the prenuptial agreement that they agree that if there is a dispute about the marriage and about the one party requesting a divorce or a get, then they'll go to a particular bezdin. They agree to submit to the jurisdiction of that bezdin, and whatever the bezdin decides, they'll follow. And this is not only enforceable according to halakha, but according to secular law. So a lot of poskim thought this was a very good idea. I think that the major poskim here in Chicago think it's a very good idea as well. They all think that it's a very good idea. So generally, I also have the parties, the Labor Zom and Chaim Goldberg, because that's always in favor of it. So we have the parties sign a prenuptial agreement as well. Sometimes there are different poskim who prefer different nuschos, different versions of the prenuptial agreement. It's good to have some sort of a prenuptial agreement in place as a dispute mechanism in case anything should go wrong. Not with this marriage, obviously, but you know, sometimes there'll be a marriage out there where it'll be necessary, and then it'll be good that the parties sign this. Then you have the the badekin. They march the chassan to the kala. He covers her face with a veil. That's for us the kanafecha ala masecha. There's a pasuk in Megillas Rus with Boaz and Rus. So some say the Mordechai says that this is part and parcel of the wedding. That this accomplishes the marriage. We don't generally assume that way, but this is an important part of the marriage process. This is something that the chassan is supposed to do, whether it's the actual wedding. Generally, it's not the actual wedding, but it's part of what leads up to it. So that's a very important act, and the chassan should do it himself. If Soloveitchik was makrited, it's not the rabbi who should do it. The chassan should do it. The rabbi says, "Achoseinu atayila favor bavak." You should build a beautiful Jewish home. So when I'm a sadek kiddush, and I say that to the kala, and then we go into the chuppah. And there are two aspects to the chuppah. There's the kiddushin. Kiddushin isn't the whole thing. Really, we call the whole thing kiddushin. That's what we call the whole thing kiddushin. But kiddushin really is the betrothal. It used to be that the kiddushin would take place, and then there would be a 12-month waiting period before the nisuin. The nisuin was the final step of, you know, what you call the wedding, that when the kala would move into the chassan's home. The kiddushin just be a betrothal that she would be considered married to him. If they want to break it up, then they would require a get. But they wouldn't be living with each other yet. So that would sometimes take place like 12 months before the Nisuin. And then the Kala would take 12 months to get herself ready for the Nisuin. Now we do the Kiddush and the Nisuin chick-chack right next to each other. We only interrupt the two with the reading of the Ksuba. You have to interrupt with something because we're going to make a Brei Priya Gafen on the Kiddushin, sometimes called the Erisin. And then you'll make another Brei Priya Gafen at the beginning of the Sheva Brachos for the Nisuin. So we break it up with the reading of the Ksuba. They'd be married even if you didn't read the Ksuva. So when I had the Birchas Kohanim to do, I do that in as well. If the rabbi's going to give a speech, that's a good time for the rabbi to give a speech between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin. The Kiddushin, the rabbi makes the Brachos, she'asalanu esarayas, v'hitalanu edi chupa v'kiddushin, and makes a Brei Priya Gafen, and then has the chassan give the ring over to the kala's hands. She places the ring on her finger. They have two witnesses. But the Ritva says that you have to designate the two witnesses. So you make sure you have two kosher witnesses and not you don't have invalid witnesses that are going to invalidate the kashrus of the wedding. So you always designate two upstanding individuals to be the witnesses. And then the chassan places the ring on the... Firstly, after the brachos are made, so the chassan and kala are supposed to drink from the wine. You're supposed to drink from the wine. So what we usually do is we have the chassan's father give the wine over to the chassan, and then it's handed over to the kala's mother, and then she gives the wine for the kala to take a sip from the wine. And then the giving over the ring, the chassan says, Hareya Mekudeshes, as we know, and slips the ring onto her index finger, her right hand, and she's a righty. And then the reading of the ksuva by a dignitary. And then you have what we call the chuppah. The chuppah is you have the brachos of the nisuin that take place under the chuppah. Then the parties not only have kiddushin, they also have nisuin, they're fully married. To be on the safe side, there's one opinion that says the nisuin is only effectuated with the yichud. So then we march them to the yichud room afterwards. Sometimes it takes a little while to get them to the yichud room. I've been in places where it's like 1 mile of corridor. Before you get to the yichud room, really it's supposed to be like right away after you make the brachos that they should be alone with each other for a period of yichud, which is 7 minutes, 8 minutes, 9 minutes, depending on your shita that you follow. And before they get marched to the yichud room, when you say the brachos over the nisuin, so we have the seven brachos, and we try to give those out to seven important people, a combination of relatives, important rabbis, and so forth. They say that Rav Moshe Feinstein, used to go to every single wedding that he was invited to because he felt that there's such an important mitzvah to be mesameach chosim v'kala. That I said that if you're mesameach chosim v'kala, you're zocher l'torah. Another opinion says it's like you were makriv a korban todah. Makriv a korban todah that you created this great level of thanksgiving to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, this beautiful occasion that automatically makes it a mitzvah as well. And the other opinion, and this is all in Maseches Brachos, says Kilu Bana Achas Mechobes Yerushalayim. It's like building from the ruins of Yerushalayim. Why is it like building from the ruins of Yerushalayim? So my Rebbe Rosh Hashanah likes to say, because there's a Gemara in Yevamos that says Ein Ben David Bad Shichu Kon Neshama Shebeguf. But the Mashiach isn't going to come until all of the souls that were meant to be born are finally born. So every time you have a married couple, they have the potential to bring more children into the world. And therefore, bring Mashiach closer. So therefore, you're building up the ruins of Yerushalayim. You're bringing us closer to the Geula every single time that there's a wedding. And you help to facilitate the wedding. So they want to build a beautiful bayis neman b'Yisrael. Therefore, all of these themes are very important when you have the various rabbis coming in and saying the brachos. Everybody is mesameach the chassan and kala in their own way. And then afterwards, there's a gemara that talks about, I think it brachos, that Rav Ashi, when he saw people were getting a little bit too happy and too joyous without any kind of perspective during a wedding, that we shouldn't forget that the Beis HaMikdash has not yet been rebuilt. We haven't yet rebuilt the ruins of Yerushalayim. So he broke a glass crystal very loudly in front of everybody so that they would recognize that we still have, you know, what to mourn. That's why we sing Meshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. And we have the chassan break the glass. So that's in order to provide this sense of sobriety, so to speak, at the moment of our greatest joy, to remember that we still have a way to go before reaching the ultimate joy. But people scream out Mazel Tov anyway after the chassan breaks the glass. And the question is that appropriate? We're breaking the glass in connection with the Imesh Kachech Yerushalayim to remind ourselves about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So some say you shouldn't say, you know, Mazel Tov at the exact moment of the breaking of the glass. I think it's okay. I think it's okay to say Mazel Tov at the breaking of the glass, because Mazel Tov that we have a sense of perspective. Mazel Tov that we understand that we still have to mourn the Beis HaMikdash, and that our joy is not just a joy of levity, but it's a joy that's grounded in Torah. Mazel Tov that this is the way that we're beginning the marital relationship. And we should continue to celebrate weddings and to have lots and lots of simcha. Everybody should celebrate lots of simchas very soon without aggravation.
Rabbi Reese, thank you so, so much for joining us and for enlightening us and sharing your wisdom with us. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining. And I wish everyone a good evening. Stay healthy and warm. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a good night.